Another Wednesday night in the books, NXT versus AEW. This is Wrestling Inc. Thank you, whether you're watching us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitch, wherever it may be. Make sure you're hitting the subscribe button to get the alerts for all the great podcasts like the one we have tonight. I'm Justin Labar, being joined, as always, by the Blueprint, Matt Morgan. Hello, Matt.
Hey, guys.
And from Forbes, read his work every single week on Forbes.com. He is Alfred Cunimo. Alfred, what's up, man?
How's it going, man?
Good to be talking to you both. Another night of really solid action on both ends. If you, whatever you like, there was something for your flavor tonight, as we will touch on. And let's just dive right into it. We have the reviews here for AEW and NXT. We also have some very big news of a former WWE, longtime WWE talent making the jump over to AEW. So we'll get into all that. Here we go. But AEW tonight, this was, I believe, taped last week. So this was a tape show. Had heard some rumblings of some good things that were going to happen on it. And we kick it off right away with John Moxley. John Moxley coming to the ring, and he's going to take on Ryan Nemeth. Of course, as noted, brother of Dolph Ziggler. Ryan's been a regular on AEW recently, kind of working like the enhancement talent role, but it almost seems like maybe there's a future here. But nonetheless, he does what an enhancement talent does. He takes all the offense coming from the star, John Moxley. Moxley beats him, hitting the paradigm shift, and then after the fact, Moxley cuts a promo. This was raved about from some who had heard that this was, because it was taped. This promo, basically, he's looking at the camera. He's talking serious. And Matt, he's talking exploding barbed wire death match. Maybe this is the way I go out. Maybe this is the end of my career. But if I'm going to go out, I'm going out with a bang.
Ugh, that part was corny. Out with a bang. Get it? No, I mean, this was a good promo. Very passionate. Can't deny that. His promos have been very good with this company. I've liked almost all of his promos. Just him as a wrestler, it's never really done much for me. But nonetheless, this was good. This is the match. I guess this was the type of match you needed going into a heavyweight championship match, right?
Yeah. What I like about John Moxley, he's so good about talking about violence without sounding like a savage. Like, he's like a really articulate savage, the way he was breaking down how he intended to, wrestle Kenny Omega and how much this means to him. And I mean, you know how much it does because he comes from CZW and that's his background. So I thought this was a really good promo, considering the fact that they're going to have kind of an uphill battle with this crazy match that they're going to have again, which I expect to be a good match. But I mean, I'm kind of worried with the lengths that they're going to go through. But I like this promo from John Moxley.
Yeah, it was a very good promo. And actually, to be fair, I was the one that actually kind of sounds, cheesy without the bang. His actual words truly were, I believe.
No, I know.
I'm cheesy. Well, I don't want, if people didn't see this promo, I don't want them to think that, because this is not Moxley's style to be cheesy. His actual way of going out was saying, if this does come to an end at Revolution, that seems like a hell of a way to go out. So it was kind of like this. It was good. It was some of the best. This is the kind of work that John Moxley, if you knew of him prior to the Dean Ambrose years, you knew he could do, but Dean Ambrose and WWE never got to really cut a promo like this. So,
when he first got to the FCW, his promos were fire, actually. His first three promos were just absolute money, to the point where everyone was like, oh my God, he's like a cross between Roddy Piper and I forget the other person. He was cutting world beater promos like from the first day he got there. And then something happened where when he got in the Shield. You know, it's kind of hard to get your shine on when you've got to do it in a collaboration with two other teammates, in staying within the context of that team the whole time. Nothing he does fits that team. You know what I mean? And that's why I think his promos have been world beater promos with AEW.
Yeah. Do you guys remember, Matt, especially, do you remember when they tried to pull that angle they filmed at the hotel with Dean Ambrose and he wasn't yet in the Shield with Mick Foley? And I always wonder what could have been.
You can't argue the success with the Shield though, right? That's
sure.
You remember like their third month in or some shit like that? Like JBL was like, this is the greatest faction of all time. They're the most. And I'm like, damn, they're calling them that already. Like they just got together. But to their credit, it's hard to make the argument against that. All three world champions. We're not here to talk about the Shield, obviously, but you know what I mean?
No, but in this day and age, normally you always figure somebody's going to get genetied, and all three of them went on to have success and are continuing to have success, whether it's in WWE's roof or not.
Yes, yeah. Big time.
All right, so we get a video package hyping up the Omega Moxley match that, of course, going to take place at Revolution, which is on Sunday, March 7th. Then we get a backstage, an interviewer who I'm not quite familiar with, so I don't want to butcher his name, but nonetheless, he's back there with Lance Archer and Rey Fénix. These are two baby faces, mind you, and they're talking about Fénix is speaking in Spanish, and Archer's getting frustrated with what is Fénix saying. The interviewer reveals that Fénix is saying how you were the worst partner ever, and they break out into a quick little brawl until the cameras cut away. They are going to be in the main event tonight. The winner is going to qualify for the ladder match at Revolution. So this is something just to, again, tease business coming up soon. Not much more to say about that. We see the clip of last week of Sting taking the powerbomb from Brian Cage, and the gimmick tonight is Sting. He wants payback at some point. So we'll have to wait and see if we get that. We also see the Inner Circle and the Young Bucks attacks last week, specifically noting Inner Circle taking a little push and shove to the Young Bucks parents. That'll be relevant here in a moment. But next up, we get the Varsity Blondes in a match versus Brian Cage and Ricky Starks. Taz on commentary. This, again, Cage and Starks doing what they got to do, looking good, looking shiny, looking big. But then the big news, gentlemen, is after the match, lights go out. We see some video. We see Sting driving and dragging a body bag, and then that's where Darby pops out of that. Of course, that was what we last saw Darby on Dynamite a few weeks ago. And then they cut to live action. Sting comes out dragging a body bag, but he reveals inside that body bag is Taz's son, Hook. So that happens. Taz is dropping all kinds of curse words because it's ECW again for him. And then Sting points up to the rafters, and here comes Darby ziplining his way into the ring with his skateboard. And Sting and Darby proceed to take out everybody, including Sting hitting a Stinger Splash and a Scorpion Death Drop. So, Matt, last week we made a big to-do. It was the big talking point of everybody, of Sting taking a powerbomb. Tony Khan did some interviews this week, in fact, and it's on Wrestling Inc., the transcript. He revealed Sting is fully cleared for physical action, and Tony Khan reveals it was him who called the spot for Sting to take a powerbomb. So what did you think of this?
I don't agree with him. Don't agree with him for having him do that. Because they're not going to be, unless Brian Cage works a singles program with him in which Sting puts him over, this was not worth it. The powerbomb to Sting. It was not worth risking. Why in the hell would you jeopardize injuring him? I don't care if he's cleared or not. Doesn't mean he can't get hurt from this. Are you kidding me? But this was a great segment. You asked me like five questions here, dude. The segment itself was very well done. It all made sense. It all added up. And I thought Darby looked awesome the way he entered. I liked the twist of having Hook be in the bag. It made Sting look a little crazier and more pissed off. It made this feud a little bit more real.
This was easily the best segment involving Sting since he came to AEW. I feel like they played all the hits. Yes. We got the Stinger Splash. We got the Scorpion Death Drop. This was a good response for the weeks and weeks of a lot of people complaining that he's really not done anything. And it was funny because Darby Allin smiled for the first time. Like, he was in that body bag, and he came out and smiled. He was unrecognizable. Like, I don't think he's ever smiled before. So that was really good. But it kind of made me want to see the cinematic match. Like, as much as Sting looked fine, and I guess he's cleared to wrestle, like, these cinematic segments with Darby Allin, because he's got a film background, they're good. And I want to see the cinematic version of this.
I do, too.
Sting can wrestle. I want to see them wrestle in that black and white. It reminded me of, like, a Quentin Tarantino, the Grindhouse movie that he did. Like, I want to see something like that more than I want to see Sting wrestle.
Great points by both of you. Unfortunately, I want to see the cinematic too. The more and more, though, that I see Sting being physical, to me, tells me it's not going to be cinematic, because the whole reason of doing cinematic is to mask the physical limitations. But apparently, it looks like they're going to do it live. So, if anything, there might be a better chance that the exploding death matches, and I don't, you know, is done pre-tape. Both of you made great points. I think, Matt, to your point, I agree. When I watch Darby, and he flung himself over the rope, and he was landing some punches. He felt, this is the biggest star that he had felt like up to this point to me. And Alfred, to your point, this was the most accomplished business in a tight, succinct segment Sting has done since his debut. So, yeah. So we got that. So I thought this was a great way for them to build to the pay-per-view coming up here in 2 weeks. All right, next up, we get a pre-tape. Shivani sitting down with Miro, Kip Sabian, and Penelope Ford. Basically, Miro, he wants Charles to come back. Charles, come back. Charles, come back. And then Shivani's handed a note, and it's presumably from the best friend saying, "Would you fight us a revolution? Yes, no, or maybe circle one." Miro puts the paper in his mouth, and like the old George Strait song, check yes or no.
Stop.
Yeah.
Fucking stop, please. This was terrible. This was so rotten on so many levels of rottenness.
This just seemed lost. Like, this character, this Miro character is lost, man. Like, I've given him week after week after week, and until proven otherwise, I'm not interested in this. I'm just ready for them to move on from this. The fact that we don't get to see Charles and they're still kind of playing to this angle makes them seem minor league. I didn't like anything about this.
Yeah, it wasn't too popular from anything I could see. Jody Sona Jenkins, $5 Canadian. Miro sucks so bad in AEW. Did anyone think it was possible how bad they would screw this up?
No, I did not think it was possible. You simply play his music. Let him come to the ring. Let him wrestle a match. Have him win. There you go, AEW. I just booked Miro better than you. Right there. Right there.
Yeah, this makes some of the darker days of Rusev look like Hulk Hogan. I mean, it's a head scratch.
This is where they got to be careful with the amount of creative control they're given their talents. Because I'm hoping this is not on Miro. I'm hoping he's not like, yeah, this is great stuff. I love doing this. I'm having fun again. Okay, fine. You can have fun again, but like, you're not going to get over doing it this way. I don't want him in segments in which he's having a match that we're supposed to mostly invest in being decided on a piece of paper. Check, you know, yes, no, or maybe. Come on. Are you shitting me? Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Trivia question, or I guess not trivia, but a preface question from King Rail, 499. Favorite match from any company pay-per-view wise?
You can't ask that.
That's very open-ended there.
I'll think about that.
I did really like, I'll be a prisoner of the moment, okay? Prisoner of the moment, I'm going to say. In the last few years, I really dug Kenny Omega and Okada.
Kenny Omega Okada 4 is probably my favorite match, but I can't say that unequivocally. There's a lot of matches that I really like.
I mean, of course. I still dig Daniels, AJ, and Joe as well.
Yeah.
The first one.
Yeah, I love Mania Mania 30 with Brian and Triple H. Brian's Path.
With Shawn Michaels, Undertaker.
I'm trying to think of something recent, but like, it's just, there's so much damn content. It's hard for me. I have to really revert to pinnacle events because it's just, there's so much. It's, I don't know. That's a loaded question, as one of you said. All right, here we go. Brandon Cutler versus Jake Hager. This was Hager again, looking very strong here. Overall, Cutler, you know, Cutler got a suicide dive and he got a few spots in, but overall, big lariat. Hager gets the win, 1-2-3. Again, the business is after the match. Santana, Ortiz, and Wardlow, they come out stomping on Cutler. Young Bucks try to chase them off, and then Young Bucks, they want Jericho and MJF. We hear the music play, but then all of a sudden we look at, we don't get MJF and Jericho, and we get to the backstage, and we see that the fact that they have grabbed Papa Buck, as they keep calling him, who was in attendance, who they showed arriving to the building earlier. They have bloodied up and beaten Papa Buck, and they throw him up against the semi that has the Young Bucks on it, and Papa Buck's blood is smearing all over it. So a personal element to add to get some more heat into this match, Matt.
And I'll put some more context on this. In the Being the Elite series episode that was on this past Monday, it starts off with Papa Buck and Mama Buck, especially Mama Buck, flying for the first time since the pandemic, and it was their family's first time seeing their two boys on the back of that truck in the parking lot. And it's their merch truck, technically, that truck with the boy, with both Bucks on it. So that, I'll give them credit for at least connecting the dots there for those of us that do watch Being the Elite every week on Mondays and connecting the dots for their upcoming show on Wednesday. I do like that. But I know nobody else is going to see it, or not a majority, but I do. So I liked it. But other than that, meh.
Yeah, even on Dynamite, they've been doing a good job the past couple of weeks, at least, introducing Papa Buck. They had that good segment earlier on this show with Young Buck's parents and Excalibur talking up his relationship with them. But I will say, like, that blood didn't look real at all, and it kind of took me out of it. I like that they're using the parents to get heat and make the storyline mean more, but I don't know if this was a great segment because it just didn't look real. And, you know, Papa Buck isn't a pro, so to speak, at selling or doing anything like that. So it just kind of looked hokey to me.
It did.
Yeah. So we'll see. Hopefully Papa Buck's not the one making the high spot save come Revolution. Jody Shauna Jenkins, best pay-per-view match. Anything with Giant Gonzalez. Right.
Hey,
two bucks Canadian for some slamming on Giant Gonzalez. There you go. All right. Then we get a video package, another nice one, hyping up, showing Shaq and Jade training, you know, showing Shaq talking smack on the NBA set, the TNT on NBA, NBA on TNT set, rather. So hyping up this match. This match is next Wednesday. It's not at the pay-per-view, so this is the presumable main event next week for Dynamite, so that'll be the big talk. But putting over that and talking about Red Velvet and just recapping everything we got here. Once again, I mean, I'm very curious, and I have high hopes for everybody. I mean, Cody's established, but Red Velvet's getting a big spot here, and Jade looks like money, and Shaq's freaking Shaq.
All the above is true.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it. It's going to be a spectacle. I think it's going to be good. I think it may not be a great technical wrestling masterpiece, but I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised at what we see from all four.
Yeah, real quick, a super chat. We got FH here. Apart from the Miro segment, thought AEW had a great show. Whenever the show is taped, I think it runs so much more smoothly than live these days.
Yeah. I got to start paying attention to when they're taped versus live to be able to talk on that better. But I agree with his synopsis of that one segment was weak.
Yeah, I mean, Matt, the best thing I can tell you in terms of telling the difference is, like, I feel like just – obviously, it's the endings. You know, the endings flow perfectly right up to that change of the hour, whereas when it's live, more times than not recently, they've been manic at trying to get through. Actually, to an extent, NXT was a little bit manic tonight, trying to make sure they got in, even with their eight-minute overrun. But yeah, we saw Shaq and Jade, and so look, confidence is going to be the big thing to watch here. And confidence is where I segue into our sponsor for tonight's show. Tonight's sponsor is Blue Chew. And men, confidence. It's all about confidence in the bedroom, right? No matter what you're doing, no matter what, at the end of the day, you want to feel confident. You don't want to have any insecurities. And that's where Blue Chew comes in, because Blue Chew is making waves and bringing more confidence in the bedroom. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra, as Cialis, but in chewable form at a fraction of the cost. Again, chewable form, fraction of the cost. You don't have to go to the doctors and do the awkward there. No, this can all be done online. Blue Chew's tablets combat all forms of ED, and it can help men give extra confidence for when it's time to perform. When it's match time, when your music hits, you got to step out of Gorilla, there's no question. You're ready for the match. You're ready to call the spots. You're good to go. That's what Blue Chew's for. Blue Chew, online prescription service. So basically how it works is, you know, no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, no waiting in line at the pharmacy. It ships right to your door, discreet packaging, so you don't have to worry about the mailman even making any kind of weird comment to you. It's all discreet, all of your private business. Process is simple. Sign up at bluechew.com. You'll consult with one of their licensed medical providers online, and then once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part, again, all online. That's how we all live our lives these days, so it's very conducive. Blue Chew's licensed medical providers will work with you to find the right ingredient and strength for your prescription, because there's two different types of tablets. Both are chewable, though, and you can learn more both from these medical advisors, and you can also go on the website and read some about which tablet might be right for you depending on what type of performance you're looking for, what type of situation you're looking for. And if you don't like swallowing the pills, nobody does. Don't worry. Again, chewable. Blue Chew tablets made in the USA. They prepare and ship direct, so it's cheaper than a pharmacy. So you can benefit from the extra confidence when it's time to perform. Visit BlueChew.com and get more details about the important safety information. And again, as I said, a couple different choices for you to go for. And we got a special deal because they are a great sponsor of this podcast and you're a loyal viewer of this podcast. Special deal. Go to you can try Blue Chew for free when you go and use our promo code WINC at checkout. Just pay the $5 in shipping. That's all you got to pay. $5 in shipping. You're going to get a chance to try for free. Go to Blue Chew. That's BlueChew. BlueChew.com. Promo code WINC to receive your first month free. And of course, we thank Blue Chew for being a sponsor of our Wrestling Inc. podcast. And super chat right there saying, Blue Chew, Ric Flair approves. Woo!
So there you go. New daddy Ric Flair. Oh, actually, no. They said that he's not the father of that child.
He's not the father of...
Credit Blue Chew for that.
Oh, no. All right. So back to the scheduled program here as we pick back up into Dynamite. We got Hangman Page versus Isaiah Cassidy with Matt Hardy and TH2. Matt Hardy, he's doing some shenanigans. Here comes a couple of members of the Dark Order. They are out to tell the ref what Matt Hardy's dastardly ways are doing, and that gets Matt Hardy. Hearsay, but hearsay works. Matt Hardy gets thrown out from ringside. Match continues, and ultimately, though, we do see Hangman Page hits his deadeye finish, and he gets the win via pinfall. Post-match, Matt Hardy talked to Page from the back. He says, Page picked Dark Order over him. He's now going to hurt every member of the group he loves so much. Hardy whacks five with a chair and then throws him off the stage and down and through the timekeeper's table. So Matt Hardy once rumored to be maybe he'd be the exalted one before we got the reveal of Brody Lee. And now yeah. Now Money Matt is all against the babyface Dark Order.
He is. I apologize to the fans. My camera is not coming on for some reason. I will figure this out. But in the interim, the match itself was what it needed to be. It's another win for Adam Page, right? That's important. And Matt's been killing it. Again, I think this is another home run for Money Matt. Again, this was good.
Yeah, this match by itself made me want to see this pay-per-view match even more. And I was kind of, on the fence about it.
Hang on. Alfred, I apologize. Sure. I don't like the stip. I want to just put up for the record again. Sure. I don't like the stipulation in the pay-per-view. But that's being nitpicky.
Right, and that's what I was kind of getting to. Where it is a weird stip, but kind of seeing how they're interacting, and they are definitely going somewhere with this. I really like the Hangman Adam Page angle right now. It seems that this is beneath him because, you kind of expect him to be a perennial world title contender. But he's been excellent, especially if you follow Being the Elite. But even divorced from that, I think this has been a great angle, and I really am looking forward to seeing how they pay off this angle with such a stipulation.
Yeah.
All right, some super chats. Stellar Justin Lopez, 499. He said, if they're smart, Paul White should come after this match and stare down Shaq and build a match of Double or Nothing. We're not there yet at the news, so if you know who Paul White's, if you know what the real name of Paul White is, there's your hint. We'll get to that, but Justin, I promise you're a loyal super chatter. I will bring the concept up of what you're saying when we get to the news, but I don't want to...
Well, I'll be the first to say it. I think that's a big reason why he's even coming to the company, just for that moment, for what it's worth.
All right, so we'll table that conversation once we do get to it. I want to make sure I don't miss any super chats here. Corey, $2, favorite pay per view match, Jenna versus Charmel. A lot of comedians.
TNA Gemma. Okay, so Jenna from I want to say not Survivor. Real World, but
Survivor.
Yeah, Survivor. I was there. That's terrible. I don't remember this. She was very cool though. By the way, we all liked her, Jenna. She was pretty cool backstage. But yeah, she was god awful. Poor Charmel. Charmel was trained. She trained with me in OVW. She went every single day, worked with all the other females like Victoria and all the others. And Charmel was actually good in the ring. And I felt so bad for her that she had to be a part of this. And worst, in TNA, they made them have to wear evening gowns in the match, which makes you not be able to move as a talent to begin with because you're tightly squeezed into that crap. And I felt so bad for Charmel that night.
Yeah, that's
it is considered the worst match of all time, actually. It really is.
It was one of the worst I've ever seen. At the time I saw it, I think it was the worst match I've ever seen.
Yeah, it is.
Did Meltzer give it -5?
I think so.
King Rail, 499. Do you guys see Jeff joining AEW in the future? I'm assuming he means Jeff Hardy. Big Show signing surprised me. Jeff to AEW seems like a fit.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Yeah, I could see it too. I think Jeff has at least another year. So it's just a matter, I guess, of how it all shakes out. And does WWE take it seriously of giving him whatever? Or is there an amount that can keep him? Or is he, does he want to leave? So we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, I think as well, again, we'll talk about him. It's becoming apparent that, look, anything's possible. Here's a company with real distribution and real financial backing. It's
hell yeah.
Louis the 13, $1.99. Excalibur laughs after almost every move. Thoughts. I hadn't really noticed that now. I guess I'll have to.
Yeah, me attention. Neither. I gotta go back and watch.
Alfred, did you notice that? Does he laugh?
Not really. I don't know if it's so much of a laugh as like oh like I don't think that's a laugh. He's just like expressing his
I wouldn't even say it's a laugh. It's just him marking out because he can't wait to get his shit in because he knows the names to every single move per every talent. God bless him for that. Like, I would screw that up big time.
It is the most. This is the most unique three-man wrestling booth ever, because
I think he's underrated, for the record. I think he's very underrated, actually.
Did you guys see him doing solo commentary on those women's matches? Like, I went out of my way to see it just because I heard he was so good. And he's excellent.
He is. He knows every move. Guys, in today's day and age, especially with that company, with how, like, 100 miles an hour they wrestle, like, to keep up with them and know each individual talent's gimmick name for a mainstream move, for example, let's just say it's a body slam, right? Oh, there was the Morgan Masher. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he knows everyone's gimmick name for their moves, which I'm impressed with.
Well, and that three-man booth is impressive because normally, I mean, most people might know this, but let's explain. Normally in a three-man, at least how WWE does three-man booths, which is kind of what just sets the standard, you have your host who does all your in and out of your segments, and they're kind of your neutral play-by-play. And then they have a babyface color commentary, and they have a heel color. That's usually just what it is. But that's not the case here. You have Excalibur, who, as Matt just said, can call all the moves. You have Jim Ross, who's like, he's the ultimate storyteller. He's one of the best, maybe the best ever. But then Shivani has his moment. So it's like, it's a weird, it's like Beastie Boys. Who's taking what verse? Who's taking what line of the song?
Ross is, in my opinion, the best storyteller of all time. But I'm watching Raw right now from the Attitude Era. Like, Stone Cold is probably like 6 months into being the top dog on that show. Rock's like at the Intercontinental level, like versus Shamrock, if that gives you guys an indication of where that is in during wrestling time, if you will. Dude, he is so good. The energy he puts into his, oh my God, his calling is amazing. But I didn't like when he first got there. I'm friends with Jim. I love him to death. He was a big advocate of mine. So I want to point that out, that I'm not trying to crap on him here for the sake of it. But when he first got there, I wasn't a fan of, you know, him big leaguing Excalibur a lot, like making fun of him for knowing all the moves and stuff. It's like, dude, that's not funny. Like, you making fun of this guy because he knows all the moves? Like, come on, man. Make fun of the kids for going 100 miles an hour if you want. Have at that. And they're no ring psychology if you want to beat them up over that verbally, but not.
Wait, to be fair, JR has done, whether it's this podcast or live, and he certainly has pointed out the referees. I think also with JR, because Matt, I kind of caught the same thing early on. I also wonder with JR if he's kind of looking over like, my color commentator is wearing a lucha mask. Like,
okay. When I first saw you guys, okay, I had the same reaction my very first time seeing Excalibur. I was like, oh, come on, dude. Don't wear that crap, dude. That's going to look so stupid. It's going to feel silly. It's worked. I have to say it does. I'm used to it. It's a staple. He's a staple of that show. I think he's incredibly underrated.
No, go ahead, Justin.
No, Alfred, please. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I usually don't like three-man announce booths, but the reason I think this works, because you do get a lot of that cranky JR, but I don't think it's as bad because of Tony Schiavone. Giovanni is kind of like the JR whisperer, where he kind of evens out JR. He keeps him light.
He does.
It's like Tony Schiavone is there to make sure that Jim Ross doesn't kind of go off the rails.
Yeah,
but he does a good job playing off of him.
Shivani's the good cop to JR's bad cop.
Yes, exactly.
it definitely works, but like Shivani does have a lot of fake excitement. Like, he's not really that excited. Like, come on.
Yeah, but you know, it's weird though, because AEW's been pretty on the pulse of like, okay, let's do all the things that people all the things that people have gotten tired of that WWE does. So like the way the my guest at this time, AEW tries to be more organic. And so I am very surprised, because I think three-man commentary booth has been a big critique of WWE for like the last 10, 15 years. I'm surprised that they do it and that they don't go to the traditional two-man. Maybe it's because of the talent they have and they feel, I mean, and I do think it's working, but I'm surprised that
I probably should have cared a lot more, Justin, but like, I think y'all give way too much time to talking about the freaking announcers, not just you, but the people that complained for the three booth for years. And like, so I never noticed that. I probably should have cared as a wrestler.
Well, my critique's based on, and I guess this is just story of our wrestling fandom, it's based on nostalgia. I think there's something so natural of, there's the play-by-play guy who's your straight man, and the color guy who is defending as the advocate for the heels to the end. Gorilla and Heenan, Vince and Lawler, Ross and Lawler. I think it's just that works so well. So when you expand to three-man, it just seems too much. But all right, keeping it going. Some super chats here. $2 from Terrence.
He's keeping it going.
What?
That's not keeping it going. But go ahead.
We got to do super chats. They're lying in Raj's pockets. Does it feel like AEW overbooks each segment? All right.
Yes. I don't like saying that, but I mean, if I'm being honest with myself, yes, definitely. Guys, how many weeks in a row did it have almost every other match on average and then a schmoz? Seriously, there was like 7 weeks in a row where on average, every other, at most, every two matches ended in a schmoz.
Yeah. I mean, I saw a report the other day, or a rumor, a report that like AEW might be moving towards a six-man tag title. And I'm like, well, they should. Would. Almost every match is a six-man tag. So
yeah. Ben should have had that.
Yeah. One more super chat here. Jody, Shauna Jenkins, any chance Spears returns to fight Darby for Sting's affection? Seriously, though, I'm guessing Spears isn't coming back. So Sean Spears, so we haven't seen Spears in quite some time. I don't know if there's more to the story that I'm missing or forgetting.
I'm sure he is. He works out at the gym I work out in, and with the coach that I use as well. And he looks amazing shape. So I don't think he's hurt, that's for sure.
There's just been too much start and stop with Sean Spears. If he came back, and it's like, oh, this again? And he's a talented dude, but they haven't done anything with him.
No, they treat him like Dolph.
Yeah.
Daniel Wilson, Wednesday Night Raj was in full force today. Yeah, Raj was Wednesday Night Raj starting at like 3 this afternoon, if you guys didn't check Twitter. He even admitted. So I'll give people a little bit of behind the scenes of Wrestling Inc. business here. I'm not going to be on the show next Wednesday for a personal reason. Raj got his dates confused. He emailed me today. He thought that it was tonight that he needed to fill in for me, and I said, no, I'm good tonight. And then all of a sudden, after that, as I looked a little bit later on Twitter, it's almost like he realized, oh, I have a free pass tonight for when I was busy. And he, by his admittance on his own Twitter, he starts drinking some wine. He's doing Q&A. He says, keep bringing the questions because I might delete them later, but I'm feeling good. And he starts answering questions. So Wednesday afternoon, Raj was in. And I looked. This is like 3 or 4 o'clock Eastern time. He's 2 hours behind me on Mountain time. So he's barely gotten out of lunch. And he was Wednesday night, Raj. NW Raj. Raj.
That is a problem, my friend.
I love that. Raj's a wild dude, man.
Just to give people the timeline of the business today, one more super chat. Vape Ross Vape Excalibur is David Crockett in a hood, right? Mentioning David Crockett back on commentary, back with Shivani and Ross in the day.
I don't think he's anybody. I think honestly, he's himself. Not to sound corny, but he is. He's very different, and I like his calling. I like him. I like him a lot.
I never give a second thought to his mask. I always look at it as just part of his uniform. Maybe because I've just been seeing him so long, because he was out in PWG here in Los Angeles. So, like, I never gave a second thought to that.
First 2 weeks I did, then it was it. I was over it. Completely over it. Yeah. It was okay. I loved his energy. And, again, his knowledge. His knowledge is freaking awesome. Now, Cornette, I listen to Cornette's podcast, and he'll go, like, whoever his other host is, I forget the guy's name, he does make fun of him a little bit for like when he tries to like make it sound like historical when they were making the announcement for the main event, Omega versus Moxley in this exploding barbed wire match. And Excalibur is going crazy like, oh, my God, it's what do you call it? Kawasaki Stadium. Like, yeah. Basically, he was trying to make an FMW match appear like it's Andre versus freaking Hogan. You know what I mean? Like, he's trying with the historic, what's the word? Like, shine he tried to put on it. It was pretty funny.
The historic context he tries to make it into.
Right. Like, we're all supposed to walk out of there with friggin', yeah, I can't say the word.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. Alfred, like you said, you've seen him out in California. Is he retired? Is he physically not able, or is he just suit better in a commentary role for them? Could they work him into a physical role ever?
I'm sure they could, but he seems pretty comfortable with the commentary role. He's almost exclusively, you know, like a commentator, but you know, he was definitely part of that PWG. He was great in PWG actually.
All right. So I always get so many chats coming. Of course I get the super chats in first priority in my queue, but I have to share this one. Orbit FN. Talking to Raj on Twitter, drinking scotch and soda. He's lit.
Raj is wilding.
Orbit. Hey, Orbit. Are you talking as in right now? Is it happening right now? Give us that answer. If so, we need. I'll get off my screen and I'll put up the Twitter timeline instead.
That's awesome.
You should just go call Raj, Matt. Jax Callens 499 was putting Kiddo to bed. Don't know if you touched the subject. Ladder match needs fixed. Needs yes, Phoenix. It damn it! By the way, my snake is so awesome. And Raj today was cold. We haven't got to the ladder match, so hang on. By the way, my snake is so awesome. I don't know what that means. And Raj, yes, Raj today was gold.
For his Valentine's Day present, the missus got him a snake.
Oh, that wow. Creeps me out. I don't trust snakes.
Yeah, I don't have a snake either. Like, who does?
Did he ask for the snake, or is it like she surprised him, hoping that he likes snakes?
Oh no, he likes snakes.
Oh, okay.
They got no legs and they move. You can't trust that. It's effed up. All right, we get a pre-tape. Alex Marvez catches up with Kenny Omega and Don Callis. They're at like some type of they're at the extermination chamber, and Omega's helping the guys build the deathmatch equipment, I guess, the explosive barbed wire. So
similar to the Undertaker that one night on Raw, I believe, where he was building the casket. That's kind of the same idea.
Okay. All right. Actually, you know what, Alfred, you put it in that perspective. Cause I'm a taker, Mark. I kind of like that. All right. Yeah. I'll take it. Yeah, all right.
We're reaching, but okay.
I just accepted the comparison of a Kenny Omega segment to a Taker segment. Holy hell.
On the air.
Holy hell. Good Lord. Can I redact that? All right. We get Britt Baker. Britt up against Nyla Rose. Women's title eliminator tournament. This is a semifinal match. So the winner is going to go to the final and face whoever makes it the final from the Japanese side, if I have that correct.
Yes. Yes.
This match was lengthy. This match, both ladies come out of the heel tunnel. Britt's doing some cheating. You know, she's doing the stalling on the outside. She's doing some cheat. Yes, you know, she has Reba doing some distraction. Britt's taking the turnbuckle pad off. All that said, when we come down the stretch, Nyla is just hammering Britt with some. Nyla keeps fighting out of Britt's finishes. Nyla then hits some massive power offs, massive power moves on Britt. Britt gets some crazy fall, you know, kick out at 2 3/4. Nyla Rose ends up winning this, but this is a Nyla Rose wins, which either of these women winning, I was fine because either one of them is really who should win the whole tournament. So I was fine either way. But Matt, did you notice this at all? Britt's doing a lot of the heel action with the cheating stuff that is outlined, but then when on the whole go home sequence, this was like a baby face showing of like heroics of how she was kicking out of this shit.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's truth to that. It's just sometimes where I don't like heel versus heel matches. Right. But what are you going to do? Like you're both heels, you know, one of you got to eventually blow a comeback, even though you're the heel and you're not, your heels don't make comebacks normally. It's a baby face spot in every match at the end. But you had to tell the story though, right? And without a comeback, you lose the pacing of that match and that fifth gear that part of the match needs to hit when somebody's been taking the brunt of the heat the majority of that match, like she was. So I like this match actually.
Yeah, the past 3 weeks of these tournament matches with the women have been very hot, or at least the past 2 weeks. They've been really good matches. Each of those last 2 weeks were my favorite match on the show, essentially. Yeah. But I think this was the weakest of those three, but I still think it was a good match. Like, I liked seeing them work together. I was just confused in the early goings because, like you guys said, it was heel versus heel. I'm still kind of confused as to whether or not Nyla Rose is a heel, and I don't think they ever resolved the whole Vicky Guerrero thing. If I'm mistaken, I don't remember them doing anything to tell us why she's not with Vicky Guerrero anymore.
They have not told us that on TV.
They haven't told us. My only guess, and again, remember this was taped last week, so they ran into the cases on the Dynamite last week that was live, is that I think that some people, including Vicky, especially that came from Texas, couldn't make it because of the terrible weather.
Oh, well, there so you I, go. That's definitely the answer. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. But they acknowledged it last week when it was live, but they're not going to acknowledge on this one that was taped last Thursday because obviously they know the weather was going to be different 6 days later. So, but I think that's what it was.
That makes complete sense.
All right, so main event time for Dynamite. We got Rey Fénix versus Lance Archer. Again, paying attention to heels and faces. Both come out of the babyface tunnel. So this is a babyface versus babyface match. But again, there's some confusion because Archer, he's the big guy, so he's working more of the heel. Jake the Snake, even at one point, who's in Archer's corner, jostles Phoenix's foot on top of the rope. So again, you got to kind of work around this at all. At the end of the day, though, Archer puts Phoenix up on the top turnbuckle and hits his blackout, and he gets the pin. So I was Matt, yeah, Archer gets a win. I was pleasantly surprised. I thought they were going to go with Phoenix on this.
Me too, for sure. I thought Phoenix was going to win. But this is good news for Archer. He's a hell of a talent. He's a very good big man. Great team player. He's already shown us with how they booked him in the beginning and him being okay with losing the way they booked him for a while there, or not booking him at all for that matter for quite a few months there. But so I'm happy for him. And this makes sense. A good big guy is supposed to beat a good short, small guy.
Yeah, and this was Wrestling Fan 101 for me because I went in assuming that Rey Fénix was going to win because it was a ladder match. But then I'm like, oh, they're going to beat Lance Archer? That's BS. But then Lance Archer wins. So now I'm like, oh, wait, so Rey Fénix is going to be in a ladder match? What the hell? So, you know, you can't please everybody.
So
but
for that reason, I'm not pleased for that reason, by the way, Alfred. That's the only thing I don't like about this because Fénix needs to be in that match. I agree with the caller before. The chatter.
Caller.
You have like a last chance. First time, wrong time.
Matt, hang up and I'll listen. All right, I gotta throw. I'm letting some free chats come through because I just can't help myself. Sergio just went over to Raj Twitter and he is litty like a titty.
Hey!
Oh my god!
You have to check this out.
I thought there was one more maybe that we might have had. Oh, here's one. Just went away. But these chats are coming through so fast. Here we go. Kara saying babyface heel tunnel. I never noticed that. Yeah, if you're looking, if you're watching on TV, you know, TNA used to do this back in the day at one point, but if you're looking on AEW's TV, the left tunnels for heels, the right tunnels for babyfaces with the obvious, you know, insertion of their separate locker rooms.
We don't need a dissertation. It's very
well. Easy. He didn't notice it, so I'm explaining this. People that
and you did notice. Just say, hey, left heels, right baby faces. But listen, though, I was gonna say though, Justin, TNA's was much better. Not when they did it both on the same stage, but when they had them on separate sides of the arena.
Yeah,
I thought that was so cool.
I agree I'm not a huge, and this is no, obviously, this has nothing to do with you, Matt. There's not a lot of things that TNA did that I like. Whole, you know, I don't the six-sided ring, but I agree with you. The opposite side of the building arena of the tunnels was a very good, like, yes, that makes sense to me. That fits in a day of where kayfabe is very scratched off.
Yes, it paints the picture immediately. You don't have to know crap about that talent. All you know is, well, they came out from that tunnel, therefore they're the good guy. That's the bad guy coming out of that tunnel. And like, that is so powerful when you think about it. Because today's wrestling, WWE especially, when a talent comes out of the down to the ring to their music, 9 out of 10 times a mainstream fan would not be able to tell you who's the heel babyface.
Yeah, well, Matt,
that's
an
important part. You're supposed to be able to know who is who before that bell rings.
So on this kind of weird topic, you were there for both when they had the opposite tunnels, and then they eventually get away with that and just had. Do you know any insight of why they did that? Why they went away from the two tunnel thing?
Honestly, no, I don't remember the reason. That's a great question. And then we had them up on the same side of the arena where there's still two tunnels. Some of the time there'd be just one right down the middle. But no, I don't remember why they got rid of the opposite side ones. It was very early on in TNA.
The only guess I would have is just logistics.
Create more space for fans to be in there. I'm thinking, yes. So yes, that's what it was. They had to pull out these bleachers on that side of the arena that prior was never pulled out. And that tunnel ate up a lot of that space. They started actually legit getting more fans to come into the shows now. And when that happened, they had to create more space. Universal did. And because of that, they had to pull these bleachers, these huge, I mean, huge ass bleachers. And I always thought it was funny because the camera would never pick it up. If you're watching the show, it's the hard camera but to the right. If you're watching through your TV screen, mm-hmm. you would rarely see that side of the arena. I'm like, why? It's packed. Like, what are you guys doing? You need to change the hard angle, the hard camera angle, because that is the side of the arena that goes all the way up with fans. And it looks way more impressive than the opposite side of the hard camera as it stood now or recently.
Yeah. That's interesting. All right, so that was Dynamite. All right, so before we get to NXT, I feel like this is a good point to do it because I know people want to talk about it, and it's very relevant, and it's part of AEW news. So the big news here today is Paul White. Well, who the hell is Paul White? He's probably that's your accountant, no. right? Who's doing your taxes? No.
Nobody asked that. Nobody asked that.
They did ask it. Paul White, frequently known for the last 20 years as The Big Show. On WWE Legends Night in the month of January, just as that recently. Well, he is no longer with WWE. He is now signed to AEW on what we are reporting is a long-term contract for multiple reasons. He is going to be doing commentary for this new Monday online AEW Dark Elevation show. And Tony Khan confirms he's also going to do some wrestling. He's not done. He's got something left in the tank. So this has dominated the wrestling headlines. Matt, I'll toss it to you. I'll just simply say this. This caught me off guard because even him included, this is the first guy to come from WWE over to AEW who I thought he's somebody who would be a lifer. He would, even when he's done wrestling, he'd be an ambassador for WWE. Vince loves the largest athlete in the world. So this comes as a shock. What say you?
It definitely does, but I mean, no disrespect, but I don't see what he's going to add. I mean, he's a big name. I get that. Okay, so fine. Yes, he'll add name recognition, brand ID. That's all well and good. But again, the old adage is then the bell rings. So what's he going to do as far as wrestling goes? Like, I was hoping to see him retire right off into the sunset. I really was. He deserved it. And I just don't like when talents overstay their welcome like that, especially people that I was a fan of at one point. And we see the lesser version of them, and we know it's the lesser version of them. Remember what I was told you about bigger guys? When you're a bigger guy, everything you do that sucks sticks out times 10 versus a smaller talent doing something that sucks. A screw-up or maybe not having good ring cardio, it sticks out way worse in a bigger guy. That's why bigger guys always need to be more protected, not because they suck, but because any glaring error or anything like that they do sticks out way worse, especially a Big Show. There is no bigger epitome of an example than him of what I just said, because he's the biggest athlete in the world, the biggest pro wrestler of all time, basically. Kali technically is, but Big Show is what we generally think is, right? He's the giant. So I don't see what he's going to do wrestling-wise. Like, how many times he's going to shoot the Bucks off 500 times and have him duck one, duck two. All right, then he eats something, doesn't bump, like 500. Like, it's going to be boring. I don't see what he's going to add as far as wrestling goes.
Could he help make the big guys? The Archers, the Wardlows?
Yes. So this is where I think they should absolutely use his expertise, because he's super smart. And when he got to WWE, he did have a chip on his shoulder. That's why they sent him down to OVW to get in better shape. And also get that damn chip that he had off his shoulder. He admitted it. And because he got given too much too quick, he said in WCW, he said that to all of us. And he had to eat humble pie. So Jim Ross and company sent him down to OVW to not punish him, but to get his act together. I was just going to say, so like as far as his ring knowledge goes, his wrestling knowledge goes, his wrestling IQ is off the charts. He's incredibly intelligent. And he'll help all, forget just the big guys. I'm hoping he'll be another voice of reason for some of the smaller guys to chill the bleep out a little bit. Make your moves mean more. Don't just freaking hit 55 moves in a row where you're stepping on your own pop, you know? And we don't get to see it because there's no fans in the arena right now. But guys, there's a lot of times I see a lot of things that are just way too machine gun back on top of each other, where you're not giving your move that half a second it needs to breathe and let the fans interact with it and cheer or boo it. So that's the whole reaction. That's the whole reason you're wrestling. Yes, you're trying to win a match, but really, you're trying to get a reaction. That's your first goal. It's not really to win a match, because it ain't a shoot. It's to look like you're trying to win a match but garnering fans' reaction and making them emotionally invest in your moves and in your character as you're doing it. And you have to let your moves set a second and breathe to allow them to emotionally invest. So without these fans in the arena, I'm worried with, especially AEW, that they're going to go into that machine gun funk, 100 miles an hour stuff again, in which they're effectively stepping on their own pop if there were fans in there to pop, as if you will.
Terrence Whitehead, hopefully they can. Hopefully he can help the bigger men in AEW feel more like a threat. So yeah, like what we're talking about there.
Yes,
I think we had one more super chat.
And let me just say something. He's a shrewd businessman. Let me see. Big Show's very intelligent when it comes to contracts. He has some of the most historical contracts of all time. Like, he's very smart. He's got a great agent. So he ain't there for cheap, folks. He is not at AEW for pennies on the dollar. He's there for big money. I guarantee it.
Which, and that's interesting. You know, there's reports from Fightful, there's reports from PW Insider. I apologize, I can't attribute every single word to who's who. Have they given
us a number? Is there a number out there?
No number, but this is kind of a, I guess Matt, you'll probably say, duh, but just to confirm to people, you know, the report is obviously when he was last there with WWE in January for that Legends show, that he was unhappy with how negotiations were. That his contract was coming up and that he was not the number that was being offered to stick around, he felt was just not up to par. And so,
I thought he was pissy because of how they treated him in that segment with Orton. Yeah, how they let Orton talk down to him and completely emasculate him like that.
They did. And I don't think we know this, but
we don't know this. You're right.
We don't, but I guess you could speculate that maybe where he was in the negotiations, maybe that was a little bit of like a little, oh, here's what we're going to throw to you, because given your attitude in negotiating right now, I don't, and that's pure speculation. But all we know now is shit didn't work out with WWE, and he's now with AEW.
I can't believe he's there. That is one talent I would have said is dead. My dead last draft choice. If you said talent's leaving WWE potentially for AEW one day, he would be my last pick for that to ever happen.
Yeah, he's there. He's there with the Cenas and Ortons. He's a WWE light.
Yes,
you know.
Yes.
If you even watch those like behind the scenes WWE shows, like sometimes you'll see people act differently than how they act on camera. But the Big Show is like a good soldier where he's backstage like, come on, guys, we can do it. When people are pissy, like they show this 2016 draft the day of, and a lot of people were in bad moods because they got split apart. And he was a guy who was like almost to an annoying tendency to where he was just trying to cheer everybody up. And that's what I always saw as the Big Show, as this kind of good soldier for WWE. That's why he may not be the biggest name. It's not necessarily CM Punk going to AEW, but the dynamic of the Big Show in WWE, this is as shocking as it gets. My jaw dropped to the floor when I was reading about it.
This is a very big name. Very, very, very big name. This is a talent that was one of the youngest WCW, if not the youngest WCW champion of all time. He beat Hulk Hogan in his first match out.
He was like 22 or 23.
Like, yeah. Dude, they were calling him Ken, like they were comparing him to Ken Griffey Jr. And they were calling him the Rookie Monster. Like they stole that from Rhino at the time, I'm guessing, from ECW. But that's what I remember them calling him vividly. And he had such a sky. His sky was a limit for his potential. WWE, like when he got there, like I never in a million years would ever think he would leave that company. And he's had so much TV real estate that he's been on. It makes him incredibly valuable. I mean, just the amount of TV hours he has been on people's TV sets is insane.
Yeah. I mean,
a lot of equity in him.
Yeah. The kayfabe got to insinuate he was under the Giants' son. So
I loved that. I was pissed when they didn't go in that direction all the way.
Brian Cyrus, $5. Do you people actually care that Big Show's going to AEW? Was a fan of his 10 years ago, but don't care to see him on TV. He should just be a producer.
I honestly don't think so. I don't think AEW fans have a Woodrow, as it were, about this news. No, I do not.
They don't have a Blue Chew reaction to Big Show coming.
Thank you. Much, much, much better. Much more PC. No, I don't. I don't think they do at all. I don't think they're aroused even in the slightest bit about having him there. In fact, I think they'd be more worried about it and saying, oh, no, they're going to start bringing in WWE castaways here like TNA did, blah, 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 blah. Big Show's a little bit more, guys, than a WWE castaway. Come on. This is a first ballot Hall of Famer. Well, maybe not now because he left the company. Yeah. But he'll be back. He'll be back in WWE. Everything will be fine. Yeah. He'll get his ring. So that's what I'm saying. So listen, I'm sorry to cut you off, but real quick, Justin, what does that say? He was willing to forego all of that. And yeah. Big Show is a, I don't mean it in a negative way, but he's a mark for himself a little bit. We all are as wrestlers, for the record, but he especially. So, like, I would like to think that the Hall of Fame would have made a big deal to him emotionally, since it, I really believe that. So for him to leave all that and shake hand all that to come here, he is coming for big money, and I can't wait to find out how much.
Well, big money, and what it tells me is that my guess is Vince felt he got all out of him in the ring he's going to get out of him.
He did. I'm sorry, right. Show. He did. You were there to do your job, which is get younger talents over. You did your job. You made Braun be the new version of you. That's what you were supposed to do. End the story right off into the sunset, man.
Right. So Vince feels that, but obviously Show feels like he has more to offer, and that's
okay. That's his prerogative,
so
right?
So we'll see. So we'll see.
It's my prerogative to turn a channel when he comes on.
I mean, there what I do go. Like about the announcement is that they paired it with this new show that they're going to roll out that's going to highlight up-and-coming talent. So now you're kind of thinking, this is an actual show. If they would have just announced we're doing AEW Dark Elevations, who cares? Like, the only thing is, like, okay, we're doing it on Mondays. But they're going to have the Big Show, and they paired that with the announcement. I think that makes this show, I wouldn't say must-watch, but it makes it a definite show that I'm going to pay attention to. Yeah.
All right, so a few super chats, and I want to acknowledge one earlier, and then we'll get to NXT and head home here. All right, Jax Collins, $4.99. Dude, I was like 13. Paul and WCW crowd, commentators wondering who he is. I'm 38 now. He's still on my TV as a star. That's legendary. I'm guessing he's referring to when he came through the St. Valentine's Day Massacre to the mat. Austin McMahon, yes. I'm guessing. Yes. Very, very famous debut.
I don't remember him being in the fans, though. Why do
yeah,
I not remember
that? I don't know what that meant. I don't know what Jackson meant by that.
Came from under the ring, didn't he?
Yeah, came from under the ring.
Yes.
The line drive, 1999 American. Jesus, Big Show's going to AEW is a big deal just for his unselfish that man is and his eye for talent. Guys like Cage, Archer, Hobbs, etc. are going to benefit immensely.
Yes, they will.
If they listen,
it
will solve their big man booking issues.
Okay, no, it'll help their big man psychology. Show will tell them all this. What the hell's wrong? I'm so sorry, guys. Hang on. This is no, it keeps going on and off. I apologize. It'll help them as far as their booking, not their booking. He's not a booker there. So he can't go in there and say, hey guys, make Ilya of Lance Archer losing tonight. I think he should win. And voila, he wins. Okay. It's not going to, that's not what this means. I hope that's what it means, but I don't think that's what it means. They did not tell us that he's part of the booking team. If he is, then that is good news for them. What they do though, where were you, this chatter here, whatever the hell you call super chatters, right? Where he's correct though, however, is how they will improve immensely if they decide to open up their ears and listen to him, because he's got a wealth of big man one-on-one knowledge that was given to him one-on-one from the best big man of all time, Undertaker, when he sucked at the time. And he was trying to do drop kicks, and I was impressed by that, by the way. And moonsaults off the top rope, I was impressed by that, by the way. And WWE did not want him wrestling that way. They want him to be a big man. It's what we're paying you to be. 7'4", as his billing was when he first came in, 550 pounds, right? Don't be doing that high-flying crap. We're not paying you to do it. Work like a big man. So he has the best tutelage to give them, because he didn't have it easy. He had to relearn and repackage himself, not just to get in better shape, but how to wrestle big and how to work like a big man, again, from the best big man of all time. Daniel Bryan has such a wealth of knowledge to share with a lot of these talents, because William Regal shared his expertise with him. So he gets it from that, and under that William Regal learning tree. A little bit of the Mick Foley learning tree, but mainly Regal's tree. So this is big for the big man to be able to basically – get Undertaker training. I'm dead serious when you think about it, without Undertaker being in the company.
Yeah. No, and you're right. He's not booking. He's not booking the long-term angles, but he's a guy that can say, okay, what needs to get accomplished in your match? Here's things you should and shouldn't do. Or
maybe this is not a fair comparison to make, dude, but Hulk Hogan used to do that for me. He'd go into the writer's room where he was not a writer on the day of TV and go, what the bleep is Matt Morgan tagging with Joey Ryan? This makes no freaking sense. He just stole my cape, stole my robe, gave the guy the rub. Why is he in a tag team division at all? What are you doing with him? Tonight, he needs to be in a singles match. One time it did work, and I was in a singles match versus Doug Williams out of left field. Even though I was supposed to be in this tag team with Joey Ryan at the time. It was all over the place. So this is the greatest of all time, many think, and Hulk Hogan, who really couldn't get that done because he was not technically a booker. I don't think Big Show can just march in there and just start demanding shit.
Yeah. Well, one other thing I want to acknowledge, Justin Lopez gave us a super chat earlier and I said I'd get back to it.
Yes.
So Cody is good. So Cody's taking on, Cody's going to be in the tag match against Shaq next Wednesday. Obviously, Big Show and Shaq is something that WWE kept trying to make happen and it never worked out. I find it interesting, Matt, because tonight's show's taped. We did not see Big Show. They gave us clearly a post-edited voiceover announcement about him in the dark. So I do find it interesting. They could have not released it. They gave Alfred and I press releases today about this. They could have not done that and waited to like let him, you know,
show up at the pay-per-view, right?
Next week. But they obviously, I think what they want, they there's a reason they released this week, right? Because the Monday show he's doing commentary doesn't start until mid-March. So it's not like you're having to get ahead of that. So there has to be a reason why they did it today.
Well, what is it then, Justin?
I think it's two. It's scoops. Yeah. Three scoops, two scoops. I'm just saying, you know,
why do you think? Oh, I'm asking seriously.
They shot Shaq hitting Carlito with a chair in WWE. And then there was always talk of the Big Show and Shaq. It never happened in WWE for one reason or another. Okay. I can't help but wonder if that's, this is interesting timing here.
Well, no. I still don't understand what that has to do with announcing him tonight instead of having him just show up in what is a obvious, super obvious storyline plot immediately for him and picking up where he left off with Shaq, where all we see is the face off between Shaq and Big Show. That's what we all pay our money to see. Don't even need to see them wrestle. I just want to see Shaq look taller than Big Show and Show be incredibly uncomfortable. He doesn't like not being taller, by the way. But I want to see that, right? So why not surprise us with that?
I don't know. I just can't help to think does this match come into play? This is just a very funny time. You know, you're a week away from this.
I'm gonna bet my house. No, I can't bet my house, but I'll bet something. That's really big, right? I will bet. I don't know what I can bet because the super chatters. How would we do this, right? But I will bet you, he will be in that match. We will get that face off and that stare down between Shaq and Big Show next week.
All right.
It'll be much easier to do it with the Nexus of TNT, too, because with WWE, Shaq can kind of go in and go out, and he wasn't really beholden to anybody. With TNT, the executives can kind of get in there and coordinate. Okay, you can
do this.
And that's going to be a lot easier to do with
Shaq. Dude, I love me some Shaq, dude. Alfred, he's one of my favorite athletes of all time, actually. So charismatic. He changed the league. He never gets credit for it, by the way. Allen Iverson gets all the credit for it because he changed the dress code and whatnot and stuff like that and tattoos in the league. But honestly, Shaq was so charismatic. He was all over the TV screen. His merch commercials were the best, especially the Reebok Big Man one with all the greatest of all time Big Man with Jordan. You remember that one? That was awesome.
Yeah.
What's the code? Don't fake the funk on a nasty dunk. Remember that? But like, I'm a huge Shaq mark, right? But like, I watch him now, and I just saw him today, for example. He was on a Nokia? What's the printer company? Canon or Nokia or something like that. Talking about printer cartridges. This dude doesn't turn down anything. So I'm wondering, is he he's got a lot of money he's paying out to his ex? I have to assume. For him to keep having to work this hard because he's getting his hustle on.
Yeah, Shaq does the general and for insurance. He does
everything.
Icy hot. That's what it is.
Icy hot.
Yes. But do you remember your first reaction when you saw him? You're like, really, Shaq? You're way bigger than this. Right? So, like, I wonder, like, I don't know what his financial situation is. The reason I'm saying any of this is because, just piggybacking on Alfred's point, that dude, yes. The NBA TNT executives will say, hey, dude, get your ass back on that show. We're paying you millions of dollars, and this is part of our package. Get over there. And he'll do it.
Michael Sachs Jr., maybe it's the opposite way. Maybe it's he's not. I don't know. He said, I hear a rumor Cody has a real shoulder injury. I don't know. I haven't heard that.
I did too. He took a really nasty bump a couple weeks ago. But it's not like a serious thing, but it is an injury.
So Big Show's Cody's replacement, Giant versus Giant. Both have Shaq has Jade. Big Show has.
Could be, but listen, at Big Show's age, you know he's in great shape. and Shaq not having any experience per se wrestling a full match, that has, I want to get my popcorn ready if that ever happens, just for the sheer fact that we will see the Mummy and Big Show dry humping Hulk Hogan all over again. Remember that?
Yes. The double team. How can you?
That's what it will look like. That's what it will look like. The lockup will not look athletic. It'll look awkward.
All right. So there's your there's your Paul White, aka Big Show news block. All right, Alfred, let's do NXT.
All right, let's get into NXT. We start off with Dexter Lumis versus Johnny Gargano. They had a good match. I thought Dexter looked really good in this match. Very athletic. The weight was really good, interfering. They had this coordinated interference. The finish was very weird. Austin Theory comes on the apron, and he's teasing he's going to use his chair, but then he doesn't want to do it. Gargano bumps into Austin Theory, knocks him off the apron, gets caught in the silence, goes to sleep, and Dexter Lumis chokes out Johnny Gargano for the win in a non-title match.
Okay, so this is why I don't like non-title matches. This is the reason why, because it could tip off a finish, right? And this, there's no real stakes there, per se. One thing I wanted to bring up, though, Alfred, that you hit a note on, and I used to be impressed with it, too, so I started really thinking about it. Lumis is incredibly athletic. I worked with him a little bit. He was kind of an extra with us at TNA at the time. He still hadn't made it on the roster, on the main roster. They use him for security a lot with like Jeff Jarrett segments and things like that. And he always had a great physique on him. He was training with Bubba and Devon here at Team 3D Academy in Kissimmee, Florida at the time, and still cutting his teeth in the business. But you could see the kid had a ton of athleticism, raw athleticism, great look. At first watching with this character, I dug the athleticism, especially with the leg drop that he does in his matches. But the more and more I watch, I'm like, you know what? It doesn't fit his character. Like, I mean, I don't know what to do, because I don't want to like sound like a contrarian here or counteract my own point here. But like, I used to make the argument to Jimmy Cornette sometimes. If I can really do something in real life athletically, why would I not do it in a wrestling match? And he's like, because you're being paid to be a freak of nature, a giant. Not everybody can do that, Matt. No, none of these other guys backstage can just put on high heels and be 7 foot tall, you know, and 300 pounds. So this is what's going to give you longevity, telling a story, and things of that nature. But my thing in the back of my head always was, but if this was a real fight and I could throw a sick, let's just say, just a sick front kick, right? That's just knocking dudes' wins out and just knocks them on the ground, and boom, I ground and pound them after that. If I'm successful with that enough, I would use that in a real fight, right? So why would I not do what I can naturally really do in real life in a wrestling format when you think about it? If we're supposed to be reacting and we're supposed to be treating this like a real sport in a real fight, why would I not use as an anchor an athletic move that I really could pull off and do to execute my offense better? Does that make sense? So yeah, like, absolutely. I don't mean to counteract my part. So like my point here, but when I watch Lumis, his offense doesn't fit his character. But like, then that's my other argument against my argument is, if somebody's really that athletic and they're able to pull this stuff off and you want it to make it look natural and real, it can't just be punches and forearms and flippers and headbutts, right? Like you got to have something that separates you from the others a little bit, but you want it to fit in your character, though, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I won't go down the hole that Matt just got in. I'll just keep it at, you know, this was for a non-title match. This at least had a lot of drama. You know, they played up to, you know, Austin didn't use the chair.
Yes.
Indy's kind of like, she's kind of flirting with Dexter. So
I'm digging her more right now, by the way.
I am too. And I don't want to scoop out for, because I know. Yeah, I don't want to scoop Alfred because I know he'll get to it in the rundown. But like, I'll say this about the way
said scoop,
a scoop.
Hey, by the way, NXT is considered developmental. What do you think about that, Justin?
Shut up. I'll say this about they put Gargano in this heel stable. Like, I don't know. But after tonight, I'm like, there's like there's a great casting definition of all four of them, and it's becoming like this great like odd family pairing. Yes, I love it. Yeah,
that's exactly what it's been, dude. Johnny Gargano is an MVP. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, Matt, we've talked about this. I kind of like you. Well, I know, Matt, I know you were not always even high on Johnny necessarily.
No, not at all.
I was always high on Johnny in the ring, but I, as I've noted, having worked with him a decade ago, he was Mr. Babyface. I could have never pictured him in this role, and now he's the leader of this wacky cult where his girlfriend's by his side. The other girl's got a crush on the psycho, and then his musclehead protege is stupid, but also empathetic at the same time. So it's just working, and then they're gonna go to therapy. We'll get to it later. I mean, I don't know if we credit Johnny. I don't know if we credit Triple H and Shawn Michaels. I don't know.
No, we credit John. No. We credit Johnny on this, you guys.
All right.
Yeah, I think Johnny did great.
Austin Theory is never, in my opinion, lived up to his hype until this character for him started. He now looks like a superstar.
I think Gargano's been great. I will say the NXT North American title has kind of taken a hit since he got involved in it. They did a lot of that comedy with Leon Ruff. He got it back eventually. And now he's right back to doing comedy. And, I mean, that belt at the end of the day.
He loses a lot. And doesn't it feel like he loses a lot too, though, Albert? Yeah.
All the time. That's part of it. He loses a lot. He does a lot of comedy. And for a guy who is probably arguably the best wrestler in this company, to have that title, I was thinking he's going to take this title and make it paramount to the world title. I mean, he's really kind of like a 5-star version of R-Truth right now. But he is a great performer. I don't want to take that away from him.
He has to, though, bro. Like he has to do it this way, right? Because that's why maybe he shouldn't have the title. He doesn't need it. He definitely does not need this title.
No.
Now we get an MSK video package talking about, of course, it was Wes Lee Wes Lee's father, so he's got that tattoo of his father. And then they get attacked by the Grizzled Young Vets when they're expected to speak. Then we get Leon Ruff versus Tyler Rust. They show us before a backstage segment with Malcolm Bivens challenging Leon Ruff. But then the match doesn't happen because Leon gets his ass beat by Isaiah Swerve Scott. He throws him like right into the apron, back. I mean, Leon Ruff is great at signing, so I'm sure he's fine. But this looked brutal, and you know Isaiah Scott is a great worker and whatnot. But this is a very intense beatdown. We never see any sign of Tyler Rust. So Matt, what did you think about this segment?
I love it. I love it. I told you guys in the beginning of this that. Yes, this dude screams babyface, Swerve Scott, obviously. But he's going to be a much better babyface for this heel transition. Mark my words. Sure. You learn all the timing down. You get the timing down. You get how to execute the heat of the match because you're the heel calling the heat in the match at the time. So because you're able to do that, you get to watch the fans' reaction. This case, they're not in the arena, so it kind of sucks for them. But that's where I improved. When I got the opportunity, like WWE brought me in, Alfred, they brought me in as a heel. I had zero repetitions in Ohio Valley Wrestling as a heel at this point. I never even did a heat drill as a heel because I was Cornette's big white meat baby face. That's how I was booked. Nothing, not even drills at practice did I do as a heel. So I had no experience at it whatsoever. They bring me up as part of Team Lesnar and I was supposed to be heels. Okay, I could be intense. I don't know how to call a heat, though. That's for damn sure. I could never call a babyface's comeback. That's for damn sure. I wasn't responsible enough to have the time cues ready and make sure that this match doesn't go over time. I wasn't ready for that either. All jobs of the heel. And because I got an opportunity to go back down to OVW, get more seasoned as a heel, oh my God, it was night and day as far as my experience level. It shot through the roof at that point because now I can cadence a match properly. And it's very important as when you eventually become a babyface, especially a smaller babyface. Shawn Michaels, my opinion, hit his stride when, yes, he became heel, but it was when he turned babyface the first time after that heel run because he'd gotten the other side of the coin's perspective on the timing you need to have of executing the heat and giving the and keeping the baby face alive with mini hope spots throughout the heat until eventually you guys understand what hope spots are, right? Oh, yeah. The heels destroying the baby face and the heat covers them 1-2, baby face kicks out. Shoots him off, ducks a clothesline. Babyface comes off with a flying burrito, covers the heel 1-2. Heel kicks out, gets pissed off, clotheslines the babyfaces, you know what, in the dirt, knocks him out, then starts kicking into gear on him, starts lighting him up for daring to embarrassing him. That's a hope spot. And you would crescendo, my favorite word, each hope spot, each progressive time. If you have a long match, a 20-minute match, you give that babyface generally 3 hope spots, depending on how the fans are participating or not. And each spot you give them is a little bit bigger than the last hope spot you gave them, until finally they do blow on their full-out comeback on that heel. Swerve Scott is going to be so much better for being able to see the other side of this coin when he goes back and be a babyface after this.
Yeah, Matt just gave a great dissertation on the X's and O's here. And I'll just say, I don't know for sure. I work with Scott a few times in the indies, and he's always a babyface. I don't know if he ever worked as a heel, so this truly might be.
Yeah.
We need to give you some heel repetitions for all the things Matt just said. So, I'm looking forward to seeing what the end result is. A quick Steven Marcuccioli, 499. Give Cross the gold streak.
Yes. Hell yes.
Is Reigns or Brock the Hogan win in that streak? Which is better of a match? So, yeah, Cross, we'll get to Cross, but I will acknowledge Cross has never lost in NXT. And so it's Cross beating Reigns or Cross beating Brock. Which of those is more equate to Goldberg in the Georgia Dome beating Hogan?
Brock, 1,000% Brock.
Brock.
1,000%.
Yes.
All right, we'll get to Cross.
And Alfred, I apologize for my diarrhea of the mouth diatribe.
No, it was great. Dude, I learned a lot. I learned a lot every time I talked to you, Matt. So that was great. Thanks for that insight.
Chris Pantaleo, dog. Raj on Twitter is like Tony Khan on Impact.
I love Chris Pantaleo. Hey, Chris is a good dude. Chris comes on my Facebook page too. And thank you, Chris, by the way, for all the nice things you say on my page once in a while. Thank you, brother, for supporting me.
You guys are bagging on Raj. This money is going to him. None of the three of us are getting any of this money.
They're doing it to pop us. They're doing it to pop us.
I know. That's
hilarious. Raj, do you even watch the show, dude?
Raj, tell us in the chat.
By the sounds of his Twitter, Raj is asleep by now, I hope.
I hope.
So we get these Cameron Grimes segments. I'm just going to go over all of them right now.
Do them.
Great. Cameron Grimes is essentially doing the Million Dollar Man gimmick, and he's self-aware about it. He's watching the Million Dollar Man on his iPad, that legendary segment with that kid with the basketball. He goes in with some guy, and was it a guy? Some random guy, and he asked him to dribble the ball 10 times, just like Million Dollar Man does. And the guy dribbles the ball 10 times because Cameron Grimes didn't see the whole thing. So he dribbles the ball 10 times, and then he takes Cameron Grimes' money. So now Cameron Grimes lost, I believe, $1,000. Later on in the night, he goes to the parking lot and all these NXT talents are sitting around. One of them just so happens to be a recent signing, Andrielle Howard. For those of you who don't know, she is a former WNBA pro. So he has her stand up. She stands up and towers over him by 1.5 feet. And he has her dribble it 10 times. So this time he realizes that if you dribble the ball, he's going to have to kick it. So she dribbles the ball about 5-6 times. He goes to kick it, but this is a WNBA pro. She dribbles between her legs. He misses. So now he has to pay her $1,000. And this is my favorite segment of the entire show. He finds some random guy backstage, and he's just pissed off because he keeps losing all of his money to this Million Dollar Man challenge. And he has this guy dribble the basketball. He says, I want you to dribble this basketball 10 times, and you get $1,000. So he dribbles it like once, and Cameron Grimes just punches the guy in the face. Throws his money on the ground and just walks off. And he goes, kiss my grips, Ted DiBiase. So that's amazing. I hope we get Ted DiBiase on the show. With COVID, maybe it'll be tough. But, Ted DiBiase is going through it. But we have to get some kind of showdown. This has just been great.
So let me ask you a question. This is all cute and it's funny. It's entertaining. You cannot dispute that this new Grimes character is not entertaining as hell. It is. He is. Let me ask you a question, though. Do you not sound like the freaking old man here, but like I wish they took him a little bit more seriously. Just not much more. Don't get me wrong. Some of the stuff was hilarious, but just a shade more seriously so it would translate in the ring better. If he's always playing grab ass backstage and doing things and being the butt of the joke more times than not, I don't want that for him. I think he's a huge star waiting to happen. He's been waiting to happen, quite frankly. And I don't know. Maybe I'm overanalyzing it. I don't know.
You know, I mean, I, Matt, I think I get what you're saying, but it's like, I think this, last thing we saw of Grimes was he was scared to death of Dexter Lumis, and that was the whole thing. This whole out of the, you know, he's got money off the GameStop stock, and he's this North Carolina hillbilly that's got money.
It's funny.
I think these segments are more entertaining than throwing him out there and having him just have a match and trying to just tell me that this match matters.
So, like, I see what you're saying. So, like, him trying to do the normal status quo of, okay, he's going to get a big push. He's going to start getting wins. You get more out of him with this, what he's doing like this, than if you were to treat him as slightly higher than mid-card talent who maybe gets 2 out of 3 wins every time he wrestles per month, let's say, versus him losing all 3 times. I don't think anybody really cares as long as he's being entertaining, right?
Exactly. I think you worked with him at one point. He's a talented guy in the ring. He can go belt to belt. That's not the question here. It's under what presentation. They kind of discovered, when he did the stuff with Lumis, I think they kind of discovered a little bit by accident. You know, he did the cinematic match and then like the zombie house, and they kind of discovered this guy is an over the top funny actor. And he wasn't supposed to be funny at first, but then he became funny. So they wrapped up the stuff. And I think somebody said, or, you know, whoever, him or somebody else said, like, you're just a funny, entertaining guy. So let's not make you Drake Maverick, because Drake Maverick is lovable, goofy babyface. You're not that. Let's have you be a conniving little, again, hillbilly that came into this money, but you are getting outsmarted by these. You're trying to con people, and you're going to, like, this just works. This is just better than throwing him out there for a match. I don't have to see him wrestle for another 4 weeks. I could just watch this for 4 weeks, and I am in complete, absolute heaven with Cameron Grimes.
Yeah, WWE has no shortage of guys who can go, especially in NXT. And so that difference is going to be somebody with a personality, somebody who can entertain with a character. And I think when people come back and they get live crowds, this is going to be one of the most popular characters they have, to the point where they're going to have to push him to a certain degree because people are going to love this so much.
Alfred, could you imagine? This is the kind of character I could see. Like, if Vince saw some tape on it, gets a chuckle. And like, I mean, I could see like a fun thing, like where Grimes shows up on a Raw or SmackDown, and he's got his $1,000 challenge, and he stumbles upon Vince McMahon and thinks he can outsmart Vince McMahon and conning him out of $1,000. I think that, like, just as I say that, I think that I'm a genius, and I think that's gold just for a quick pre-tape of establishing this guy as,
would be funny.
Yeah, I don't know. I love this, but yes, great segments.
So we get to Zoe Stark versus Io Shirai. This is weird. Zoe Stark just debuted last week. She had a nice showcase match, but now she's going one-on-one with Io Stark. They had a very good match, back and forth. Io Shirai beats her clean in the middle. They really did kind of put her over afterwards with the announcer saying she's a rising star. Io shook her hand. Then Tony came out, and she said that you fight everybody but me, and Io said that she'll fight anybody, anytime, any place, anywhere. And so it looks like we're setting up Io Shirai and Tony Stark. I'm sorry, Io Shirai and Tony Storm.
Yeah, this was Zoe's, I think it was her second TV match. I mean, they really gave her a ton of love in this. This is gonna be big for her career. They didn't give her the win, but again, they made a point to say, like, she's not winning this, but she matters.
Mm-hmm.
So we go backstage to the this is with the way. This is the next segment that we were alluding to. So Austin Theory backstage, of course, everybody's all up in arms. Johnny Gargano's pissed because Austin Theory didn't pull the trigger. Austin Theory says that Dexter Lumis is just a misunderstood guy. Candice LeRae says he should be in jail. Indy Hartwell is doing this thing where she thinks he's hot. They all get angry, and Johnny Gargano says that Austin Theory is going to need to go to therapy. So that's the segment we're going to get next week. It looks like we're going to get the way in therapy.
It's going to be a home run. I'm predicting it already.
Alfred, what was the name of the therapist for Kane and Daniel Bryan?
Dr. Shelby is the first
thing I thought. Dr. Shelby.
They have to have him come. That's the only thing that'll make this way act better is if they have Dr. Shelby.
They get Shelby, it's a grand slam.
And if I know Gargano, he's probably requested to get the – because they brought Dr. Shelby, the actor, back once before. So I bet you Gargano is probably – I can imagine him like lobbying, like, get this guy back. This would be great stuff.
That's going to be really fun.
Yeah, man.
So then we get Casey Catanzaro versus Xia Li. Casey got a lot of offense in this one. Xia Li was selling like crazy. I mean, she's just been killing everybody lately. But then they go outside. Xia Li steps on Casey Catanzaro's knee on the steel steps, so she hurts her knee. Casey Catanzaro could no longer go. This is all the work. They call the match because Casey Catanzaro can't go anymore. So there's no pinfall. It's kind of like a TKO finish. Then Caden Carter gets angry. She confronts Tian Shan and Boa. Ask what their problem is, and Xia Li hits a spinning back kick to Casey Catanzaro and then runs out of the ring, and then she says, Caden Carter, you're next.
I'll say this. I love all the Xia Li. I've said a little of the backstory. It looked brutal the way they shot and executed her putting Casey's leg up on the steps and, like, stepping and snapping it. They just executed and made it look great. This whole Xia Li stuff is just – out of, you know, it's a home run.
Yeah, she's one of my favorites. I don't think they should have let her run out of the ring. I just didn't. If she's going to be this kind of killer character, who's kind of a monster, I don't like seeing her run away from anybody.
I don't know. I love Zaya constantly looking back at the mysterious figure on the throne and that's her power source. I don't know. I'm a mark for this Xia Li. Chinese tyrant backstory.
I love it. What did you think about it, Matt?
I didn't like it in the beginning. Remember, I thought it was silly.
Yeah,
but it definitely builds the suspense. I always have more questions coming into it afterwards, which is good.
Yeah,
it's very intriguing.
So we get a video package.
My camera's not working. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, we'll see you soon. Next week, we're getting the NXT Women's Tag Team title match between Nia Jax, Shayna Baszler, and then Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai. And we also got a video package, which I thought was very well done, between these two teams so later on. So they're doing this next week to go head-to-head with that big Shaq match. It's something.
It is something, right?
Drake Maverick. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's something that's great to see this crossover, but I you know, if this is their answer, where are they positioned on the show? If this goes head to head with the Shaq thing, it's not going to the Shaq thing's going to beat it.
They're going to need much more,
of course.
We get Drake Maverick and Killian Dane versus the Grizzled Young Vets. Grizzled Young Vets announced they've been fined for attacking MSK. They had a nice little match. The finish comes when they hit Ticket to Mayhem on Drake Maverick, and then Killian Dane carries Drake Maverick away from the ring, kind of to the back, kind of like the bodyguard. And he gets all the way to the back of the backstage training area, and Alexander Wolf confronts Killian Dane and says, "You used to be a monster." So, kind of teasing that maybe Killian Dane's going to turn on Drake Maverick someday, but kind of a little soft.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I love the Grizzled Young Vets finish, and. You know, Wade Barrett alluded to in commentary, you know, where's the Bruiser of Belfast or whatever they call Killian Dane? I get it, but I don't know. I still think, again, kind of like what I said earlier about Grimes, I think he's got more room to be booked if he's in this oddball couple tag team with Drake than if they just try to just book him as a straight heel, because I feel like they have a lot of like straight monstrous heels, men and women right now. So this is probably his best lane to be in.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Legado del Fantasma finally arrives. They were kind of teasing that they might not show up because if he didn't show up, he's going to get stripped. So toward the end of the show, he finally arrives. And this leads to Karrion Kross versus Santos Escobar. They start this brawl outside. They're both dressed in street clothes. Early on in the match, Santos Escobar slams the semi-truck door on Karrion Kross's shoulder. And that becomes kind of the story of them working over his shoulder. This is essentially a 3-on-1 match with Kross. I've never seen him sell this much. He sold a lot, but eventually just fended them all off throughout. They were kind of interfering, and he held them off. He hits a Saito suplex to the table on Santos Escobar, then proceeds to hit multiple Saitos before hitting a forearm to the back of the head for the finish, and Karrion Kross pretty much single-handedly destroys Legado del Fantasma and beats Santos Escobar for the win.
Yahoo.
So two things I took away from this. One, this Kross has not lost in NXT. If they wanted to put over Escobar and have and whatever, this was the opportunity, because you said, okay, look, Kross valiant effort beat 3-1. Kross still gets booked to win. So that A should tell you something about like the in the words of Cameron Grimes, to the moon that Kross's booking has got. Number two, Kross's the finish to this match, Kross hits his whatever clothesline to the back of Escobar's head. That is telling. And what I mean by that real quickly is this match is a street fight. There's all this, these spots going on, a few high spots with, the semi-truck, whatever. This is a Triple H old school booking NXT that they do. Even though the finish does not look as extravagant as the Saito suplex into the commentary table and some of the spots, this is the old school mentality of the finishing move is the finishing move. The finishing move is deadly. This finishing move did not look that great, especially compared to all he did, but they still let it be what is the 1-2-3. So they let Kross once again remain undefeated, overcoming 3-1 odds, and they still made sure that his finishing move is protected. This is all the signs of this guy has the rocket to his – it is up his ass. And he will not be in NXT for much longer. The rocket is up his ass through the company, through his look and his performance, and I'm here for it.
So really quick, I was just going to say to you guys that it actually worked. A surprise. I've been hitting this thing hundreds of times. One of the things about him, just on an off-subject note, if you guys have never had an opportunity to hear Karrion Kross speak in real life, holy crap. Some of you that have heard me talk for the first time outside of wrestling, I'm like, oh my God, you're way more educated and polished than what they gave you on television. Why'd they make you stutter? You could talk, It's got nothing on Karrion Kross. Watch his interviews, like his shoot interviews he does. He is so well thought out. He went to school for friggin' psychology. He has like 5 different certificates of children's psychology. He's really big on, I'm just going to say what it is. I'm very proud of him for this. He's stepped up here in Central Florida and has been coming and joining me at a lot of different events fighting child sex trafficking. He's very passionate about it. He's very impressive when he speaks. Holy crap, you guys. Like every time he talks, I'm like, and in my head, I'm like, I got to go to wrestling, obviously. And in my head, I go, would I book him that way, though? I don't think that would be the same because he's this badass on television, right? And this awesome character. So it's like, I don't want to talk too much about it because I don't want to take away from the fans' allure of that persona he plays, right? Because it's such a great character. But holy crap, is he the opposite of this. And not in like some little wimpy weak way either. Like, I'm not saying some nerdy sounding guy. I'm saying he's a super polished, super intelligent, and just well thought out.
Yeah.
Super intelligent.
To extend on what Matt said, he can kick your ass no matter what, but he can talk more intelligently on different days of the week. But he's going to kick your ass regardless.
He's just so impressive to me on his day off and stuff. Like, we did a Zoom call for something like this. It was like 7 a.m. I'm like, hey, brother, I'm not trying to be a mark here or nothing for you, but like, don't you have NXT tonight? He's like, yeah. He's like, that's important to me, though. I'm like, God bless you. I hope there's more of you out there. I was really impressed by that. I just was.
And it's cool that his real life girlfriend or wife is she gets to be part of the package presentation of him.
Dude,
and she effectively.
She actually, I didn't even recognize her. I didn't know she changed her hair at the time to white. I always thought in my head it was blonde. And I'm like, I was like, the white hair lady looks so familiar. How do I know her? Is she like a resident of mine? Like in my head. I'm like, oh my God, that's Scarlett. That's his wife or whatever, right? And she goes with him everywhere. Super, super proud wife, you could tell. But he is so, guys, I cannot say this enough. Try to find shoot videos of him doing shoot interviews, and you'll see a little glimpse of what I'm talking about. He's so into better. Is he talking my video? No, he doesn't. I didn't get him on video for mine because I wanted to, you know, WWE is cool about letting people do different things on their own, you know, but I didn't want to, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
ruin his opportunity to do things he's probably very passionate about. Yeah. You know, because WWE is like the party police, party poopers.
So we get an LA Knight promo. He's talking about he's going to debut on his own terms. You don't know when that's going to be. And then we get into our final segment, which is Adam Cole explaining his actions. It is a typical – oh, first they show the footage from last week of Kyle O'Reilly getting stretchered out. It does look very realistic. I can kind of see why some of the people – there was so much confusion of whether or not he was really hurt. But then Adam Cole says he's ashamed of himself. He apologizes. He says that he feels sick for what he did. Roderick Strong comes out. He's angry. He says everything's changed. But then Finn comes out, pounces Cole. We get a big brawl with Roderick Strong and Finn Balor. And then Roderick Strong clotheslines Adam Cole. And then Adam's crying. He's on the ground. He wants things to go back to normal. They hug. And then, of course, Adam Cole hits a low blow, calls Roderick Strong stupid. So we get another fracture with the Undisputed Era. So they are pretty much asunder. Like, they all have turned on each other, and they're ready to go to their separate ways, it looks like.
Yeah, no, it's a great storyline, right?
Yeah.
I'm digging it.
Yeah, you know, after this cross match was done, when the cross match started, I looked at the time, and I looked at NXT and an 8-minute overrun. I was like, man, this can be a long main event. And it, you know, it was it was lengthy enough, but then Cross's match finished, and I'm like, all right, we still got like 15 minutes to go with commercials included. What are we going to really actually finish with a big bang? But I thought this did it. I thought this fit well. The timing and the low blow of Cole and the words he said. And again, I this feels like it's the countdown to Cole leaving NXT. It feels like he's Raw or SmackDown bound post Mania. That's what I feel. But if that's the fact, this is the right move. The story's there. So, I thought, again, pretty much every week, AEW's got a lot of like bombastic moments that you're like, you got to tune in to believe it. I think NXT's the more consistent show, just consistent. It's here. AEW could be up here, but AEW also drops down here with the shit with Miro and the things we talked about. But NXT is just kind of a very steady line of consistency.
Yeah, especially wrestling-wise.
That's hard to argue, don't we agree?
Yeah. I definitely agree.
All right.
That was so the show.
I don't think we have any more super chats. Yeah, a lot going on. So again, you know, nothing tomorrow here live. We'll have Wrestling Inc. Daily, myself and Nick Hausman, more Wrestling Inc. Daily Friday. I'm on Busted Open on Friday morning with Mark Henry and Dave LaGreca. We'll have Friday night SmackDown here. We'll have Raw. We'll keep going. Matt, anything else you want to give a shout to?
Nope.
Alfred, give us the Forbes rundown. What's going on in the Forbes world?
Follow me on Twitter at This Is Nasty. Go on Forbes right now. I talked to the great Court Bauer about MLW. They're making big moves. And I got some other interviews coming up that you guys are going to be excited about. And then follow me on YouTube, Pro Wrestling Bits.
Alfred's a scoops. Alfred is the scoops here.
I'm trying, man.
He's replaced me. All right. thank you. Yeah. Thank you, everybody, to join us. We appreciate it again. Facebook, YouTube, Periscope, Twitch, whatever it is, we appreciate it. Appreciate the super chats. Again, we'll be back live Friday night. We'll be back Monday night. Chambers coming, all the stuff. Just follow the Wrestling Inc. social media. For Matt, for Alfred, I'm Justin. Have a good night. Be safe. Love each other. Love wrestling. We're done.
We're done. I'm anticlimactic.